This is Press Play. I'm Madeline Brand. 80 years ago, thousands of people of Japanese ancestry were incarcerated in the United States. It was 1942, just after Japan bombed Pearl Harbor. Families were separated, taken from their homes to live in large, remote camps, such as Manzanar, near Bishop in the Eastern Sierras. For decades, the official number of people who were incarcerated was around 110,000. But there was never a complete census of everyone who is detained. Now, a team of researchers from USC has discovered around 15,000 additional people who were incarcerated. So the new total now is 125,284 people. Every one of their names is finally listed in a new book. It's called the Eirecho Monument. It's around 1,000 pages long. It weighs 25 pounds, and it's now on view at the Japanese American National Museum here in Los Angeles. Joining me to talk about this is Duncan Ryokin Williams, a professor of religion at USC and the founder of the Eirecho Monument Project. Welcome to Press Play, Duncan.
Thanks so much. Great to be talking with you, Madeline.
Great to have you. How did you decide to embark on this project and try to find every single person?
A few years ago now, at the height of when children were being separated from their families as Central American migrants were coming up to seek asylum in the United States, we were finding in the Japanese American community so many of the former World War II internment and concentration camps used back in that time were being reused and repurposed for separating children from their families. And so a group was formed called Tsuru for Solidarity. Tsuru in Japanese means cranes, and people made paper origami cranes and placed them on fences of the Border Patrol and ICE detention facilities. Mm. And there was a big protest that was going to be planned for Washington, D.C. to put the cranes, we were going to make tens and tens of thousands of cranes and place them on the fence around the White House in Washington, D.C. before the pandemic actually made that protest not possible. And I was part of the ceremony committee, and I was in charge of kind of like, what would we do there? And the action I was thinking about was to, you know, collectively, thousands of people recite their names. When we discovered that there was no master list or comprehensive list of the people from back in World War II, the government hadn't made any, no university, no community organization. And so our group kind of embarked on this project. And what we think is as close as we can to 99.5% certainty of every single person that was incarcerated back in World War II.
So until you embarked on this project to protest the family separation policy, you didn't realize that the statistics weren't complete when it came to Japanese detention.
Right. I think there had been some understanding that there were some educated guesses that, you know, on museum text panels and important government websites, there had been numbers ranging from 110,000. Some people said 120,000. Some people said up to 125,000. But no one really knew for sure because nobody had made a master or comprehensive list. And it was surprising because, you know, back in 1988, Ronald Reagan signed a reparations and redress bill for Japanese Americans who were still alive. And you'd have thought maybe that kind of office would have had an accurate number. But
yeah,
I interviewed staffers who were there at the time, and they were talking about how there were lots of paper files, and it was kind of a little bit, you know, chaotic trying to deal with all these claims, and that they didn't have a master list to work off of. And it's because the camp records are really not in a central place. They're disorganized. There's not just the 10 large camps run by the War Relocation Authority like Manzanar, but we discovered in our research that there were 65 other camps run by the Department of Justice, the U.S. Army. And so the records are just not easily accessible and not easily able to be compiled. And just additionally, they misspelled names a lot. And so our effort was just not only to compile the list and get to a number, but also make sure that we can't really honor everybody if we are, you know, misspelling their names. And so we try to make a big effort to make sure it's not only comprehensive, but accurate.
So what are the kinds of things that you did to try to find all the people who were interned? Where did you look?
So we went to the National Archives, and what we found was you know, there's some camps that do have camp rosters, and but for many of the camps, it's kind of like they're like little snapshots in time who happened to be there on the day they created a camp roster. They also had transfer lists when people moved from one camp to another. It was almost as if they had to report to Washington, like they treated people as if they're like luggage or something. They had these tags, these numbers, and they would send information to the provost marshal's office and the Department of Justice, and they would start to collect all these transfer, they call them receipts. And so we went through thousands and thousands of those, and the rosters, and the internees themselves created, sometimes in the Japanese language, their own kind of directories. And so what we discovered was we'd had to look at the 1940 U.S. Census. We had to look at World War II draft cards. We had to look at birth certificates. We had to look at things beyond what the government made specific to the Japanese American, you know, incarceration to verify name spellings and that kind of thing. But for all those reasons, I now understand why nobody undertook it before.
And so the grand total was you found around 15,000 additional people.
Right, 125,284 people that we have listed in this kind of book of names that's at the Japanese American National Museum right now. So we put the 92-year-old elderly lady, you know, who's the oldest person to go into one of these camps, that's the first name, and a baby born right before the last of the camps close. Mm-hmm. And his name is the last name in the book.
Have you met any of the people who you discovered who weren't counted before?
Yes, just a few weeks ago, we had an informal ceremony to invite the public to come and put a mark underneath every name in the book. And when we were doing that, we found camp survivors, often in their 90s, to come and represent that camp, or descendants to do the same. And, you know, so I remember one 90-some-year-old saying, this is proof I was there. It somehow seeing his name kind of confirmed for him, not just, you know, individually, but his entire family, that this was a part of American history and that he's part of an official list of names.
Some of the people you discovered, I understand, came from South America. What were they doing in the United States, and how did they come to be interned?
So one of the reasons also that we have a larger number than the previous kind of guesstimates of how many people were incarcerated is because we use the wording all persons of Japanese ancestry, just so that we get away from the kind of citizenship status, because obviously back then, you know, Asian people couldn't naturalize and become Americans until after, you know, World War II. And so the immigrant generation people were Japanese nationals, and then two-thirds of the group were, you know, U.S. citizens, American-born. But we also have a considerable number, thousands of people who came from especially Peru, but also Bolivia, Mexico, many Latin American countries where the State Department, U.S. State Department, they wanted to have people that they could do these civilian, you know, prisoner exchanges with. And so what they did was they urged countries in Latin America, their foreign ministries, to round up Japanese community leaders, people that might seem like assets, to do a prisoner exchange with Japan. And so they forced these people, rounded them up to come to America. They would land in New Orleans, Louisiana. And as soon as they stepped foot on American soil, the U.S. government said, you're here as illegal aliens, and we're going to take you into INS, or Immigration Naturalization Service, custody.
Wow. So how did they lure them in the first place? What were they promising these people?
So this was involuntary, right? So these are people rounded up against their will.
In South America.
In Peru. For example, in Peru, the Peruvian army, as well as the Peruvian Secret Service and local Lima police, were involved in rounding up the Japanese community leaders in the days and weeks after Pearl Harbor. At the behest of the American State Department.
And then once they arrived, they were arrested and as possible future pawns.
Exactly. And what happened was, you know, there were two trips of ships of people were exchanged, but then, you know, the war got so bad that they couldn't do that anymore. And so thousands of these Japanese Peruvians and Japanese Bolivians, Japanese Colombians, etc., ended up just spending the rest of the war in these internment camps in the U.S. And some of them returned, you know, to Peru or Bolivia or whatever, and others went to Japan. But quite a few, you know, remained in the United States and found a way to make their home in the U.S.
I don't know why that seems worse than the regular old internment, which is pretty horrific to begin with.
Right. I think the kind of like the, it's almost like kidnapping or something.
Yeah.
So that's one part that, you know, obviously makes it seem just even worse. But obviously, at least for Japanese Americans, I think the thing that makes it difficult to, you know, comprehend today is that usually, you know, when you have imprisonment or detention, you're supposed to have committed a crime. You're judged by a jury of your peers. And two-thirds, you know, of this total number of people were U.S. citizens and should have been afforded that. But it was like little babies. Mm-hmm. And it didn't matter if you're a U.S. citizen or not. That's how extensive that was. And that also seems egregious in terms of, like, how are little babies going to commit espionage or sabotage?
Right.
Well, how are they a threat to the nation's security? And so it's absurd. And that's why we did this project in a way, because, you know, the United States was also at war with Nazi Germany, Fascist Italy, and certain German nationals, Italian nationals were picked up by the FBI once the war World War II broke out. But they were treated as, you know, individuals, as persons. And most of the Germans and Italians picked up ended up getting paroled. Most Japanese did not. But the big difference was there was no mass roundup of all German Americans on the East Coast and Boston and, you know, all Italian Americans. That was not experienced. And yet, for Japanese Americans, they were just seen as this kind of inscrutable Oriental that just, you know, we can't trust them, their loyalty to the United States. And so I think that idea of, like, this was a group that was kind of excised out of the American landscape and given, like, these little numbers and tags to kind of go off to these camps. And their individuality, their persons, their names were kind of, like, not respected. And so our project to do this, Book of Names, is in part a kind of repair of that kind of aspect of American history as well.
Well, it's also remarkable that it hasn't been done until now.
Right. Yeah. And you know, it's that point where the camp survivor generation, they're at that age where we just have to do it before that generation passes on. And so there was a sense of urgency for us to make sure we do it at a time when some of them can come and acknowledge themselves, acknowledge their siblings, and so forth. So it did feel timely in that way as well.
Well, it's a fantastic project, and congratulations and thank you for your work on this.
Thank you so much.
The Irei Monument is now on view at the Japanese American National Museum here in Los Angeles. It was put together by Duncan Ryukin Williams. He's a professor of religion and director of the Japan Study Center at USC. Duncan, thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you so much, Madeline.
Coming up, we'll continue our conversation about the imprisonment of Japanese Americans. We'll talk to a woman who was born in one of the camps. That's next on Press Play.